The Westwood One Podcast Network.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. Excited to be here with you guys.
Always a pleasure, Andrew.
Ready and willing.
This will be a good one. We've got Jake Olson on with us today.
Another one of those stories you just like feel like a dirtbag just for getting up in the morning and not doing more. Thank you.
More.
Hi, dictionary salesman, huh? He must be one hell of a talker.
Yeah. He shoots in the 70s in golf.
That's insane.
I don't.
And he can't see.
Well, I can't wait to get to this show. You guys are going to love it. But before we do that, we're going to do what we do every week. We're going to share a listener story. This week, we got one brought to you by Shaq from Australia.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to get this. I've been practicing my Australian voice. So I was going to try to do it in my best Australian accent.
All right.
You guys ready?
Yep.
let me get it ready.
Red leather, yellow
leather. All right,
leather.
Here we go. Red, yellow leather.
Marcus, Shaq from Australia, fresh from Down Under. Now, my story isn't one for the local and paper or news network. However, the fundamentals of what I did subconsciously is adapt to the never quit mindset. I was a mechanic, a dirty old greasy mechanic. However, I had a mindset not like any other of the other apprentices. I was chasing financial freedom, not to work as a mechanic for the rest of my life. So I went and asked the CEO of the business, "How did you afford that BMW? He simply replied, "Not by being a mechanic. Come back at Smoko, first break, and I'll talk to you." So I did. I went in and he sat me down and asked me why I asked him that question so randomly. I told him I want to have financial freedom and nicer things to my name. His reply was blunt but powerful. "Stop being a mechanic and find out what you can do whilst wearing a suit." So I did. I found sales and business development, but it was a complete backflip to what I was used to. Being a salesman and business developer was something I heard a friend of a friend doing, not anyone around me, so I was unsure of what even the hell these jobs would entail. However, I Googled sales training Gold Coast, went and took training lessons 4 weeks straight and while still working full time. I went and had 28 interviews, of which I was successful for 25 of them. I chose to be a car broker due to my mechanical history. The first 1 to 2 years, I almost gave up every single day. I hated it. I sucked. I was the worst one in the company at this job. I barely had the confidence to make another cold call. But it was a Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m., and I found the Team Never Quit podcast. I was always interested in the SEALs and SF in general, and when I heard the story of Dom Razzo, I stood up, threw my smoke on the ground, marched into my desk, grabbed my headset and phone with my leads to call, and that exact afternoon, I closed 2 sales. Following day 3, the day after that, 3 again, and before I could even notice what was going on, I was at the top, sitting above all 113 salesmen, some who have never been there for decades. Now, when I look back, I realized that I never gave up, ever. Did I want to? Yep, 100% every day. Did I do the absolute best I could every day? Yes, I did. I kept trying and trying, and now I am happy to say I've created a life for me and my family that I thought could only be a dream at the age of 24. Thanks to you guys and your mantra, I kept pushing and I will always keep pushing until someone kills me. Thank you for changing my life. Your Aussie brother.
Nice work.
Solid. Great story. Solid, great story. Thanks for sharing that with us, brother.
That was a great impression.
I love
it, man.
Australia, I had the best time when I was there. The people there, just the overall attitude. I mean, that never quit mentality, it's everywhere.
That goes to show you, don't know where you are, what you're doing, and what you want to do. All you got to do is, it's all in you. All you got to do is flip the switch. And we good.
Yeah, nobody knows what they're doing when they step into something in the beginning. Even if you read over it, you still got to apply it. People ask sometimes, man, how do you get to where you're at? And how'd you get all this? The first thing is, man, just show up. That's it, just show up on time, right? Show up on time. And that's where you meet the people and start to get the respect that you want and that they have, and vice versa.
I think it was a great story. I think you can apply yourself to, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, and there's no such thing as it's impossible. I think just apply yourself and fake it until you make it.
You literally got to take the step. Literally got to take the step.
Yep, you got to take the step. First step. It's always the first step.
And then once you're there, and if it sucks and hard and hurts, take another one.
Take another one. Keep going.
Just keep going.
As a good friend of mine said, you know, if you've got two knee replacements, just keep running until you get your next set.
Yeah, because they always upgrade the tech.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, if you do, even if you take that first step and you get kicked in the chest and blown through the next wall, man, as soon as you crawl out of that wall and crawl back to the line, catch your breath, now you know that that's coming, you know, step around it.
It really is not that bad.
Yeah, and you can do it again.
If there's one thing that I've learned, it's that sharing your story is a powerful thing. There are people out there that need a kick in the ass, and your story could be the one thing that changes their lives forever. So why don't you take a minute to share your story at teamneverquit.com/podcast. Just click on the Share Your Story button in the menu so we can encourage you along the way. Your story just might be shared on one of our upcoming episodes.
All right, guys, it's that time again for our Patreon question of the day. Today's comes from Todd. Todd asks, what is the oldest weapon you've ever fired?
Oh, I found a dragon off one time.
Where?
Overseas.
Was in the ground? Like where? Like in the ground?
Oh, no, in a village.
All right.
And I don't know how old. I say dragon, it kind of looked like that. Oh, no, we found a musket. I tried to buy it from this villager and he would not sell it to me. It had the big barrel in. Yeah. They had bedazzled it. Who came in before? No, it was a gun. Who came in before Russia?
Turks?
Maybe that's what it was. No. I don't know. They've been fighting for 2,000 years. Everybody took
Somebody dropped a musket in there.
Somebody dropped a musket.
Somebody dropped a musket.
Hang on.
How about you, Marcus?
All right. So I got to fire a cannon.
No, you didn't.
From the...
No, you didn't.
Yeah, that was cool. And that wasn't cool. Should have had some ear probe in. But anyways...
All right, hang on for a second.
Yeah, I'd have to say it would be a cannon. I got a 10-pounder, too.
There you go. Turkey. Turkish. Okay, and this is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to Yahoo Willis. Turkish musket.
Maybe you can get one on eBay.
So is the Ottoman Turks?
Yes, that is exactly what it was. Turkish musket. I don't know if you knew this or not, but the United States fought in Afghanistan.
When?
I know. And then the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, Georgia, Poland.
See, Georgia was there.
I know. They got there before we did. Poland, Romania, Turkey, Austria, and the Afghanis fought in Afghanistan.
Australia. There you go. Austria, they don't fight.
List of wars involving Afghanistan. Let's see. To all of our readers in the United States, we will get straight to the point. Okay, going back, let's make sure this is right before we post it.
I got to fire one of those old 50 cals.
No, you didn't.
I was on a hunt, buffalo hunt.
Soviet Union, the British Empire.
You said it was bedazzled up. Was it bedazzled
up
like that?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, that's why I wanted it. Yeah, it looked just like this guy right there. Show him, brother, that one. That's exactly what it looked like.
Mm-hmm, like coral snake, 1784... 85.
This just turned into a big Google fest.
I'm not using Google.
I don't know if they fought against Turkey or Turkey was fighting with them against somebody. You know, we need to figure that out. Afghanistan-Turkey relations.
Okay, so Alexander, that musket was from the 1700s, and Alexander rolled through there in 330 BC.
Probably not a gun.
Could have been. You don't know that.
330?
Todd, I think you got more than what you asked for, buddy.
As a war against
Great questions.
Persia.
Really got the intellectual juices flowing. Hang on, we got some maps.
So Alexander died in 323, and his Afghan son...
Well, to be said...
Did not live to
inherit. One of his forts are still in Afghanistan, and there's a gigantic cell tower in the middle of it now.
As my Australian mates would say, that's not a knife, mate. Or more appropriately, that's not a gun, mate. That's a sword.
Shut up.
That could be one of the greatest
one-liners. Nobody's ever pulled a knife on me, though. I've been waiting.
You've been carrying a...
Patiently.
A machete. And
I'm going to break out my katana and hit him right in the face with it. That's what my brain tells me to do.
While Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire like a hot knife through butter, it took him years to pacify the region of Afghanistan. He only brought it into his empire by wedding the daughter of a tribal leader.
I bet if you spend a day with old Spencer Stone, you'll get a knife pulled on you. Golly, that kid.
What?
Right?
Old Spencer Stone, man, just can't catch a break.
He's on that train.
The train Paris. To Paris. And then he had all those knives pulled on him.
Yeah, yeah, in L.A.?
Oh, yeah.
Poor kid.
I shot a slingshot once.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Was it old?
It was old.
I shot a Turkish musket. In Afghanistan. I don't know when it got there. I don't know how it got there. I don't care. All I know is the dude wouldn't give it to me or sell it to me. I guess he knew what $3 American looked like.
He knew it was cool, he knew American history. He knew the difference between George Washington and Benjamin Franklin.
It was head to toe bedazzled. You know how they do? They decorate Blink. All the they decorate
Oh, yeah,
all
they're
weapons.
All blinged up. Even the AKs. Even the trucks. The jingle trucks.
Jingle trucks.
Jangling.
I mean, the front of that truck looks like...
I'm not saying I didn't steal a jingle truck one time.
But I was in an area where one of them got stolen. Saying
that. I've ridden in one. Let's put it to you that way.
I borrowed one?
No. Take it back.
If you guys want exclusive access to the show, bonus behind-the-scenes content, join us on Patreon. You're going to get exclusive access to the Patreon community where you can support each other. You get rare access to Morgan, Marcus, and all of our incredible guests. Head over to patreon.com/teamneverquit and join what we've got going on. Ask your questions, and you might have your question answered on the next show.
Give us a little background, a little history of you, where you come from, and then start to obviously climb right on into the kind of the first Division I blind collegiate athlete to play in a game, correct?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Go from there, buddy.
All right. Well, I was born in Huntington Beach, California, and I was raised here, been here ever since. Obviously, I'm 22 years old, so I was born in 97, and that was right before Coach Carroll became obviously the iconic guy that he is in LA now, and started paying attention to football as I grew older, and definitely grew up a huge USC fan just based on the success of the USC Trojans. That we obviously have an NFL team, so it was kind of just college football, and I for sure wasn't going to be rooting for UCLA. So,
did you have football in your family? Did your dad play?
He played in high school, but not at a collegiate level, but he was a big guy. I mean, he played more basketball than anything, but he got his MBA from USC, and that's where kind of that Cardinal and Gold got my blood regardless. But, when I was 8 months old, I was diagnosed with retinoblastoma in both eyes, and the doctors found it late. So it already grown to a point in my left eye where they couldn't really even save my left eye, and they were afraid that it would spread, and so they removed my left eye, which removes the cancer, but obviously you remove the eye, so you forfeit your eyesight in that eye. And so grew up with just one eye. That it was only about half as bad in my right eye, and so we fought it and it went away. And then pretty much from about a year old to 12 years old, it was just a constant cycle of that cancer coming back. What are we going to fight it with? And we threw everything we could at it. But after the eighth time that it came back at the age of 12, it was a different message in that they told me I had maxed out on chemotherapy, I'd maxed out on radiation, The localized treatments wouldn't work anymore, even the experimental treatments we used. So, I mean, everything we threw at it, we could, we did. And at this point, then it became, okay, well, it's either we can try to fight it with something that we know is not going to work and play, roll the dice on, you know, if it doesn't control it, if it doesn't cure it, then it will definitely spread. And that, you know, at that point, then I'll lose my life. Or, you know, we can remove this eye, which obviously rids the cancer, but again, it forfeits the eyesight. And, you know, at that point, it was my only eye, meaning I have to go completely blind. And so that was obviously a tough message to hear. I, you know, remember just how frustrated I was, just because, you know, I just fought this cancer 8 times. I lived my whole entire childhood pretty much in a hospital to fight this cancer. It just wouldn't go away. And, you know, I pushed through all the treatment, and because I didn't want to lose my eyesight, because I didn't want to lose that eye, I wanted to beat this cancer. And at the end of the day, just to be told I was going to have to lose my eyesight to this cancer anyways, it was very frustrating. I was sad. I remember kind of thinking like that I am a 12-year-old. I have an entire life ahead of me. You know, I hopefully have 70, 80 years plus of living. And like to think of all the things that I was now going to miss, not seeing, like my wedding, my future kids, and myself graduate from high school or college, that was really sad. And I couldn't get those thoughts out of my mind. You know, for a month and a half of knowing I was going to go blind to the surgery date, there was just a lot of hard times of just constantly thinking, this is the last time I'm going to be able to see this, this is the last time I'm going to be able to see that. And obviously just that pressure, that day looming ahead. But I also was gifted with a lot of amazing opportunities. One of those being, as you guys seen the story, Coach Carroll inviting my family and me to a USC practice, which became much more than a practice. I mean, it became just a awesome experience that was full of love and support and joy. That team wrapped their arms around both my family and me. Like I said, Coach Carroll became a mentor, a hero to me. You know, they were just there for me. They absolutely made going through that experience a whole lot better, in the sense that whenever I was with them, it just, I didn't focus on what was going to happen. It was an escape. And it was just something that I'll never, ever be able to repay Coach Carroll for. But absolutely it made me part of that family. If nothing else, I obviously went blind. I mean, that day did come, and it was a tough day, but continued to push forward. I kind of made that decision coming home that day from the hospital that I wasn't going to let blindness stop me, that, yeah, I understood this was going to be a very difficult road ahead. It was going to be a learning process every single day of getting back to just living normal life. You know, you think about everything you got to relearn how to do, including just walking around with a cane and learning how to read and write again with Braille. I mean, there's just, it's a different way of living. I understood it didn't mean I couldn't live. It didn't mean I would have to stop living. It just meant there was a different way of living. And so for me, it was just pushing forward and taking every day with stride, having that flexibility and adaptability of just, okay, this is frustrating. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but let's find out a way. And I didn't want to let blindness rob me of a meaningful and purposeful life. And so I kept being a kid. I kept having fun. I kept playing sports. When I went to high school, I didn't play my freshman or sophomore year. I actually kind of went against my word there. I let blindness stop me from playing the game that I loved, which was football. But about almost the end of my sophomore year of high school, I said, you know, this is something I promised myself I wouldn't let happen, and I'm not going to look back on high school, regret not playing ball. And so picked up the pigskin, figured out there is a position out there for me that I can play, and that was long snapping. And so I practiced really hard that summer going into my junior year, showed up my junior year for fall camp and earned my spot in varsity, was a starting long snapper, played 2 years in high school. Again, kept that relationship with USC. So I was up there visiting practice as a recruit now, just because I played high school football. And Coach Sarkisian at the time said, you know, Jake, I've seen you out there snapping. You plan on coming here. We'd love to have you on the team as a long snapper. And that was something I cannot pass up. I definitely wanted to make that my reality once that thought was put in my head. And I practiced hard again, got the grades, got into USC, and then obviously joined the team. And then from that standpoint, had to work hard for 2 years to just proving myself, putting on a lot of muscle, the doctors were kind of giving me grief. They didn't want me to go out there and get hurt. So I made sure I beefed up enough to where if they said that, they'd look crazy. If anyone looked at me, they'd be like, how is this guy going to get hurt?
Yeah, you went from like 180 to 230, right? 245, something like that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I'm not, that was just where I wanted to go. I was going to make sure that if that was what they were going to bitch about, that wasn't going to be, that, again, they were going to look crazy if they mentioned that. So I did, and then eventually got my, you know, opportunities out there on the football field to go snap. And it was just an amazing, amazing feeling of just the culmination of hard work, but also just the love and support that I felt from Trojan family and just college football and sports fans around the world. You know, a lot of them saw my first story when I was at the age of 12. So to see me out there snapping, you know, 8 years later was just, like I said, it was and just joyous moment for all of us that were part of that story. And especially for me, just being out there with, again, that same logo on my helmet and my jersey that helped me 8 years ago get over, again, what was one of the toughest things I've ever had to go through.
That game, that had to be a roller coaster. We covered a lot of material. I got two questions I want to ask you, brother, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had your eyesight for 12 years. I've always been curious about this, and I can't imagine, you know, knowing one day you're going to walk in and you're going to the next time you wake up, it's gone. When I close my eyes, I see colors, shapes. What is it? Is there like just a black void for you? Is it bright? How does that work?
Well, so actually I can answer that in two ways because I have half and half of both worlds where someone who's never seen to someone who has seen. So, in my left eye, there's nothing. I mean, that part of my brain just never developed. You know, I never really saw that left eye. It was taken at such a young age that part of my brain never developed. So that, it's really just nothing. You know, it's not black. My right eye, it's not a black void. I mean, like a lot of people think like, oh, it's like walking in a dark room where all you do is see black and, you know, whatever. But you have to understand, like when you do go into a dark house or a dark room, you are still seeing black. Like, you're not seeing obviously what's there, but you are seeing something, and that's just black. So when you lose your eyesight, like when you're just blind, you're not seeing anything. So it really is just your mental, your mental imagery.
It's like a mental
imagery.
Picture. It's okay. Like
kind of thinking of a dream or just, like you said, kind of just what's in your mind, your mind's eye. And so that's what you kind of see. So, I mean, it's almost like just picturing what you would see, and it, you know, it's a little more vivid than if I just asked you to think about like what dream you had last night, because it's actually kind of there in your eyesight. But again, it's not actually based on color. I mean, you can see color, but it's not like, again, it's not like a black or like a red or yellow or whatever, just because it's so. That's still seeing, you know.
All right, that's interesting. Did they have to take, or did you lose your optic nerves when with the cancer and with the surgeries?
Yeah, so they kept the optic nerve. So they just removed the eye and the retina, because retinoblastoma, the tumor is located in the retina. So they were able to leave the optic nerve there. So yeah, there's the optic nerve there. And, you know, I've definitely just talked to someone who are already creating technology where they put a little chip there on that optic nerve. And there's a camera and stuff. So I always said this.
You know where I'm going with this now. Obviously, you've been around.
Yeah, I definitely think in my lifetime there will be something where I can see again. I do believe that.
That's exactly where I was going with that. If you still have that optic nerve, I honestly truly believe you're spot on. I think in the very near future, hopefully you'll get an opportunity to get that back. Man, that would just be, whew.
I know, that'd be crazy. I really got to be careful on who I marry then, you know?
Well, fortunately for you, man, you're going to see the beauty on the inside first, right?
Exactly. No, I don't think that'll ruin anything. I just, it would be funny to think about though.
Because it's tough growing up with, when you have eye problems, because that's the first thing kind of kids focus on. My brother and I, our eyes were messed up real bad when we were born because we were twins. And, it can be pretty brutal. And we had both of ours. I mean, it's kind of one of them deals. Your attitude's so upbeat and your focus is where'd that come from?
Well, you know, I think, and I'm a twin too, actually. I have a twin sister.
Why we love you.
There you go. I think I was born stubborn. I really do. I'm just kind of a stubborn guy in nature. And, you know, my friends will say that's my best and worst quality. But, you know, I think when you, do face, you know, things at a young age. I think kids are very special in that, where they do build resiliency really fast. I mean, I do think that, you know, kids go through a lot and they're able to push through. And I think I just became battle tested at an early age. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think I overcame blindness. I said I was a 12-year-old who was obviously, like I told you, very frustrated, angry, sad, scared. You know, my future was uncertain, but I also was a 12-year-old who's like, okay, I just faced cancer for 12 years. I was in the hospitals throwing my guts up because of chemo. I was going to the hospital every day to receive radiation. I was the first kid at CHLA where I stayed awake during radiation. They had to put me to sleep every day. I said, you know, I'll just remain still. Like, just trust me. Like, I went through all that stuff, and I said, okay, if I can go through that, I mean, that's hard as well. This is going to be a new challenge and a different challenge, but that doesn't mean I have to approach it any differently in what I was going to do, which is just keeping a positive attitude through it, understanding that there's going to be great things that come of it, you know, remain grateful through it all, understanding that I'm still me, I'm still Jake, I still have the capability to go out there and, like I said, live a life that I want to do and live, and that includes understanding I'm still an athletic guy, I still have a really capable, intelligent mind where I can go in the classroom and remain in a normal classroom and get good grades. So all that stuff is just kind of putting it in perspective and just saying, all right, look, like I said, this is going to be a lot different, but by no means does it have to ruin my life.
Yeah, you're a true testament. Not only a Division I athlete, but graduated with honors. I mean, I wish people would take hard note of that. If you lose something, if you're just an athlete and that's all you focus on, somebody takes that away from you, your life's not over. You could turn that around and become an elite athlete in academics. You fortunately did both, which is over the top impressive.
Yeah, all you need is the drive.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, that's what, you know, like I said, I tell people all the time, like, you know, if you're an athlete and you blow out your knee, like, sure, maybe you're not a star tight end anymore. Like, that, maybe that was taken away from you. But doesn't mean you have to stop enjoying the game of football. Go become a coach. Go become a color commentator. Go be around a program that you love. Be an athletic director. Like, whatever it is, I mean, there's so many things. Like, I understood when I went blind, I was never going to be a star quarterback of a high school football team. I was never going to be a star receiver of a high school football team. But does that mean I have to sit there and feel sad and angry every Friday night because I can't be out there and play? No, I'm just going to have to figure out a different way where I can enjoy the game that I love, and that was through long snapping.
Yeah, you were the one of one that took the leap that showed everyone else how to get there.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely, like, one of the great things about it was, you know, I think just being out there and something I feel honored and blessed with is that I can go out and play a game that I love and inspire people by doing it, which is, you know, obviously a benefit of doing it. It's not why I do it. You know, I do it because I love the game, but it does inspire people, and that makes it so much better.
I got a question, man. And I don't even know if I'm going to ask this the right way, but that day that you went in to get your surgery to have that, when you closed your eyes and then, I mean, you knew you were closing them. That next morning, was it as bad as you thought it was going to be, or?
Well, I mean, you know, again, it was, you know, it was a surgery, so it was, you know, I remember, like, it was, I mean, that whole morning was just very rough, and I remember all the nurses and doctors knew me. I spent so much time there that, you know, all of them pretty much knew me. I called them my posse. You know, I had a posse of nurses that would always be there, and anesthesiologists that I knew very well that, you know, was there for countless surgeries. And so, you know, everyone was crying, which, you know, it was just a very sad, I mean, like I said, we all fought so hard. And it felt unfair. And so I remember, you know, the nurse was crying and she put my IV in, and then it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, like, here's this propofol, like, let me know when you want me to push it. Cause again, you know, as soon as that goes in and I fall asleep, when I wake up, like, I'm, you know, blind. And so it was tough. I mean, I she's like, let me know when you're ready. And I remember thinking, like, I don't, like, how am I supposed, like, I don't know. I can't tell you when I'm ready. Like, it's not, I'm never going to be ready, you know? But I know, obviously I said, okay. And, you know, it's tough, but when I woke up, like, I was obviously highly medicated. So, you know, I didn't feel as sad in the moment that maybe you'd expect. But one of the things I really did recognize almost immediately, though, again, I found out on October 1st I was going to have to go blind. And on November 12th is when I went blind. Okay, so, you know, 43 days or whatever you want to call it. You know, one of the things that was so much of a, like I said, a burden on my back was the constant thought of, oh my gosh, I have 20 days of seeing now. I have 10 days of seeing. This is the last time I'm going to be able to see this. Oh my gosh, what's it going to be like? I'm so scared. So when I woke up and I realized right away I was blind. Again, it wasn't this like overwhelming sadness that overcame me. It was almost, there was some parts where it was a relief of like, okay, this has happened. This is a done deal now. My cancer's gone. I'm not going to have to deal with that shit anymore. And I'm just going to go and live my life now. And that's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to, again, adapt, relearn how to do a lot of this stuff. But my life's going to move on. And I know I'm going to have amazing opportunities that come my way. And I'm just going to keep pushing forward. And so that's what I did. And there wasn't that burden on my back anymore of, like, the pending doom of becoming blind. I was blind. That was my new life. And now it's time to live that life. And so, believe it or not, that was kind of the feeling that really was with me that night as I fell asleep.
What was the last thing you saw?
Did the family, you and the family travel quite a bit? I would think like, hey, look, I got to see this before I can't see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, we did a lot of special things and yeah, family definitely came. I mean, I don't know. The last thing I really probably saw was just the whiteness of the ceiling of the hospital. But, you know, both my parents were both there. And, you know, just seeing them for the last time and stuff. I mean, those images I probably remember more than whatever the last thing I saw was.
Yeah, man, it's like when you woke up, it was when you started to see. The life that you took control of after that was amazing, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. I think, I definitely think there's vision on the outside and there's vision on the inside. And my vision on the inside became a lot clearer once I locked out of that hospital, understood my life and what I needed to do and what I wanted to do. And I totally agree with that.
Walk the listeners through this because the game day special, very moving. My wife, I showed it to my wife this morning actually, and she started crying. Can you walk us through the Western Michigan? Because that was the first time you actually got to go out and
right.
Long snap for the Trojans. And hell, I mean, you know, I try not to get teary eyed, but I was getting choked up too. I was so proud of you, buddy. I mean, I was like, yes, I felt like I actually won. It was awesome, but I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that's what a lot of people felt, but that's why it was so cool. But no, I mean, it was. I actually started practicing a lot more in just the weekly practice. Actually, the year prior, we went to the Rose Bowl, and I remember I was starting practicing a lot leading up to the Rose Bowl or Rose Bowl practices, and I remember Coach Helton didn't come up to me, but the starting long snapper did, Zach, and he said basically, he's like, hey, you know, Coach wants you to really warm up. He goes, like, the opportunity comes. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, well, I don't know if the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, would be the very first place I would want to snap in a college football game. But, you know, I was ready for it if it did occur. But it didn't happen that game. But I remember heading into the next season in that fall camp, I started obviously ramping up practice even more. And then Coach Helton came to me. It was actually the Tuesday or Wednesday of that week, and just basically said, hey, you know, we're definitely getting you in this game. And so just mentioned, prepare yourself. You got this, but I just want to let you know that we are absolutely getting you in. And so I just practiced hard that week, just had a great week of practice. And I don't know, you know, you're nervous heading into the game, obviously, but it's good nerves. It's not like, oh man, I don't know what I'm doing, or oh man, like I don't know how this is going to go. Just like, I want this to happen. Like, when is it going to happen? And then, you know, obviously you run out there. But one of the cool things is that you guys know this too. I mean, like when I had that ball in my hand, it's, you know what you're doing. Like I hear this all the time from military personnel. It's just like, when you're in that position, I mean, you train for that. I mean, that's what you are. It's not like a big deal when you're in it. You just, that's what you train for. And I know you could probably speak a lot more to that, but you know, in that moment, that's what it's kind of, there's a piece there that, hey, I know what I'm doing. But two, I mean, there's just an overwhelming joy as well. Just like, oh my gosh, this is finally happening. Like, this is actually happening. You know, to be honest with you, like, I really didn't even care what happened. Like, if I snapped the ball over the holder's head 20 yards, like, I don't really even care, just because I knew I was out there. I knew I worked to be out there. I knew all the hard work that went into that, and I wasn't going to let the result of that play, like, determine my feelings of going out there. Like, I just was so happy.
Well, let me tell you what everyone's going to remember about that. The game, who won, who lost, they'll remember that that happened.
Oh, it's the USC one. It was a perfect snap.
Right?
It was a perfect snap. I mean, textbook.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just awesome. I mean, it really was just awesome being out there. And, you know, again, my teammates all felt just overwhelmed. All the fans felt overwhelmed. I mean, it was so cool.
Even the other team was all about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, because, you know, they see me practice, but, I mean, they're just all for it. I mean, they wanted it just as badly as I did, and it was just something that was so fun to be able to do. It was addicting. As soon as I snapped and ran off the field, I'm like, oh, man, I want to get back out there and do it again.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. So the pinnacle for your long snapping was we finally got in the game, but you're almost a scratch golfer.
Yeah,
what the hell's going on here, man?
Because my brother and I, between us, have four eyes, and we not scratch.
Oh, man.
No, honestly, that's my main sport, and it's definitely something that after losing my eyesight, I wanted to make sure I didn't give up. And so I found a way to go out there and figure out, hey, how my dad's going to line me up, how we're going to do this. And then it was just focusing on my swing, which needed a lot of work, just to make solid contact again with the ball. You know, we started from square one pretty much after losing my eyesight. So just building up, and then eventually you put shots together. And it just, I mean, unbelievable hard work that goes into that. A lot of frustrating times, trust me. I mean, there's definitely a lot of frustrating times. But like anything, you learn from it. You learn from every bad shot. I've been able to tap into just my body, my ability to feel my swing and everything that goes in there to an extent that I really didn't think I would be able to. It's really amazing to feel your swing, to understand what's going on in your swing, trusting your swing. I mean, there's so much trust that goes into that. But no, I mean, it's a really sweet, sweet feeling to go out there and hit a ball, you know, 300 yards, to go out there and score. I mean, it is something that is a freeing feeling, just because I know, obviously, my dad's lining me up, but I know it's me. You know, I know it's just, like, I enjoy the camaraderie of football a ton. I enjoy the team, but, you know, I long snapping like this a little bit too, where, I mean, it is your snap, but, I mean, the kick, if the kick's good or not, I mean, that's entirely up to the kicker, where, you know, if you're out there playing golf, I mean, every shot's pretty much you, and I think that's why so many people get frustrated with it, because it is such a personal, like, who you blaming, you know, like the ball, the club, like it's you, man. And I think that's what frustrates so many people. And it is frustrating, but it also is so gratifying when you do well. Cause you know, you put that practice and you put the work in, you are out there achieving and showing yourself what you can do.
Yeah. So I'm kind of eliminated the existential, what, all that noise around you, focused on the mechanics, right?
It's just muscle memory.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I definitely think there's something to be said about that, of, you know, not worrying about the water, not worrying about the sand trap, not worrying about the tree, whatever, just understanding what shot you got to make, feeling that shot, the mechanics of that shot, and just producing it, you know, under whatever shot or stress you're under. Just like, hey, this is what you got to do. Don't worry about anything else but doing that, and trust that, you know, you're swinging, that ball's going to go where you want it to go.
I hate you. Never works out for me like that.
Man, you should write a book, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're in your second book, yeah?
No, I know, that's my point. I hate the knowledge that, and that's,
you can title it
more like
"Quit Bitching."
Yeah, well, you know, it definitely. One of my coaches said that all excuses are ways you cheapen yourself, and I believe in that, in the sense that, you know, you go out there and you say, oh, like, I can't hit this shot because I can't see the ball. Like, well, that's an excuse you're making, that you're cheapening yourself. No, like, I know my value as a golfer. I know I can hit that shot. So don't point at blindness or whatever because you can't hit that shot. Like, no, figure out a way where you can hit that shot. And I think a lot of people can use that in their lives, where whatever whatever they're going through, like whatever challenge they're facing. Like, again, there's the absolute pressure and the, I guess the tendencies to use an excuse, and you can use an excuse, but all you're doing is cheapening yourself. And like, instead, believe in yourself. If you fail, oh well, learn from it and keep going, because you know you can eventually do it.
What's your best golf score? Don't say like 68 or something like that. Crazy.
My best golf score is a 78 for 18, but I you know, I've had over the last couple, I guess, weeks or months here, I have 138 and 137 in my pocket right now. So I unfortunately couldn't continue to play a full 18 on those days. But you know, I don't know what would have happened on those days.
Mm. I mean, that's an amazing way to explain that too. Literally, whatever it is that you're, whatever problem that you're having in your golf swing is an excuse. Just get rid of it. Like a lot of times you're looking, you can't see the ball or you can't see where he's, well, man, imagine if you didn't have that ability anyways, it wouldn't end this game. So you just have to use this and then you have to use that. And to perfect each one of those to where you notice all the mechanics and how it comes together. And then it's a step-by-step process.
Yeah. No, people are always, you know, they joke with me, like, you got to give me tips. I'm like, well, you know, my main tip is this. It's just like a lot of golfers go out there and, I mean, you know, obviously if you're just having fun, you're having fun. But if you really do want to improve your golf game, a lot of golfers go out there and, you know, stuff starts to go awry. You're hitting the ball left and right and left and right. And no one takes really the time to really understand why the ball is doing that. You go out to the next shot and you try to hit it straight. It's like, okay, that's fine. But what happened on your last shot? Like, you know, let's feel what happened. I mean, if I yank a shot, did my chest get out in front of that ball? Like, was my tempo where, you know, I was just way out in front of that and that created my, you know, arms to kind of pull through it? Or did my wrist break down right after contact? You know, what happened there? And then once you realize that, then you can go to your next shot and, you know, try to feel that where that doesn't happen. But I think a lot of people miss that initial step of, like, they just don't care. Like, oh, I hit it to the right. That sucks. Now let me go try it again. It's like, well, wait, you're missing a whole step here. That ball went right for a reason, you know?
God, I totally do that. All right. So let's recap this one just so I can get my head around all this. Division I athlete, honors graduate, 70s golfer, raced in NASCAR, two books. What are you doing now, bro?
Well, you know, I am working on my golf game a ton. I mean, that's something, you know, I want to see if I can get to scratch or really close to it. Just, I would love to see how far I can take my golf game. I think that'd be really cool. You know, I'm one of the most, I guess, fulfilling things I'm doing currently, just going around and speaking and being able to influence people's lives. I mean, I've been given such a great platform and such again, it's a privilege to go out there and be someone that people can look up to. And so I definitely had those people in my life. You know, Coach Carroll was a huge one of the huge individual in my life, where when I was going through what I was going through, was a voice in my ear of, you know, win forever, always compete, you know, not letting the circumstances dictate your success, but, you know, going and pushing through that and working hard and, you know, all that stuff. And so there was a I want to be that voice to other people, and you know, very fortunately, I have been. I want to continue to do that, so I speak a ton, you know. But I definitely want to see where I can take my golf game. Like I said, I started this business, which is really cool. It's Engage, letsengage.com, which is really, really cool. We're doing some cool things there, and that's a whole different realm of frustration and overcoming challenges. And is in the business world, being an entrepreneur, man. I tell you, there's definitely things that happen creating a business that you want to pull your hair out, and maybe some people do, and that's why my manager's bald. But it's fun though. But definitely that's still in the works, and I don't know, just seeing kind of where I want to take my life. I mean, I obviously am a huge sports fan, always have been, and I never want to get away from sports. So, you know, I'm 22 years old, so I obviously got a long way to go, but, you know, I don't know if in the future being some type of broadcaster or TV personality with covering sports. I mean,
you can do anything you want to do. I'm sure you figured that out by now.
No, well, so, you know, that's where I am, but I'm definitely happy with what I'm doing right now. And it's again, it's a very satisfying, fulfilling, life I'm living, which is exactly what I wanted it to be.
You're a living example of the inspiration. They don't have to, I mean, see it on TV or read it in a book. When you show up and do your thing, that's awe-inspiring.
You were like the skinny kid, for every skinny kid. I was just going to be skinny my whole life. Nope. I worked out, I worked hard, got in the gym, got to where I needed to be. I wanted to be a Division I athlete. I was a Division I athlete. I wanted to be an honors grad. I was an honors grad.
Yeah, Mojo and I had to take anthrax to grow this big.
Yeah, how tall are you? How tall are you exactly?
I'm going to say 6'4". I'm just shy of 6'4", and USC never, everyone makes the joke, oh, he's, 6'6" in the program, or, like 6'2" in the roster or whatever. It's like, I never got that benefit of the doubt. I was always listed as 6'3", and I'm so much closer to 6'4" than 6'3". It's not even funny, and they never gave me it. I'm so pissed, but I'm 6'4".
Okay, yeah, you're same size and build as me and brother.
Yeah, we didn't grow like everybody else either.
Yeah, we were late bloomers. We were 5'6" when we were 18.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember my boot camp ID said I was 175 pounds. I think I graduated SEAL training at 185 or 190 pounds.
Buds?
Oh, yeah, Buds, yeah.
After that, high school football coaches, we came back after a few years in the military. They're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Where are you guys at in high school?
We ran into them at Outback Steakhouse. And they're like, what in the heck? Anthrax, man.
I grew, like, one of the reasons my golf game was so jacked up for a while too. I went blind at the age of 12. I was about probably 5'5", 5'6" when I went blind, and then literally within the next year and a half, I grew to like 6 foot. So I grew like 6 inches. So my little kid swing around my body wasn't working anymore for me out there. So that's one of the reasons why we really had to change that too. But I was tall going to high school, but my dad, he went into high school like you guys, or into college like you guys. He was like only probably 5'8" or 5'9" or something. And by the time he came back from college, his freshman year back home for the summer, he was 6'4". So like he grew a ton his freshman year as well.
That was one of the cool parts about having the twin next door. You could see yourself.
Yeah.
Is your sister? Yeah. What's your sister do?
She tall?
Yeah, Emily. She's about 5'10", so she's tall as well. Yeah.
Yeah, we're identical twins. He's actually taller than me, but I'm 6'4" on a good day.
Not anymore, brother. That's awesome, dude. I'm glad I had the best time with you on learning about your story, man.
How do folks follow you? What can we promote for you? You got two books, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, just my Twitter and Instagram handle are both at JakeOlson61, and I pretty much use Instagram and Twitter a lot, so you can keep up with me there. In both my social media handles, there's, stuff where you can contact me, but, probably the best way to contact me is just going to my social media handles and clicking on my my link in my profile there, and there's a lot of different ways you could contact me. So, I say that's probably the best way to do it.
Perfect.
Well, man, just you keep living your adventures and keep writing your own stories, because there'll be tons of people out there ready to read them. Trust me.
Well, thank you, man. Likewise with you guys. Obviously, your story is very inspiring as well, and touched me when I saw it. And it's something that is a great lesson for anyone who's like me going through troubles, is to keep fighting on, not giving up. And so I appreciate what you guys do as well.
I'm gonna tell you something, buddy. And this is Morgan. So I'm a UT grad. I'm a Longhorn through and through. So you can obviously understand that little hiccup in the giddy up there, but you have made me just a little bit more of a USC fan, because I wasn't one at all.
Well, that means a lot. I understand that, because I make the joke, and it might be true, I'm not even sure. There are always some truth to jokes, but I said, I faced cancer for 12 years and went blind at the age of 12, and still the worst memory of my childhood was losing to Texas in that Rose Bowl.
best game in the history of college football.
Man. Good Lord.
Oh, man. Hey, thanks again, partner. We sure appreciate you hanging out with us.
All right. Thanks, guys, so much. It's been fun.
No, it's always, man, hearing it come out of their mouth, right? When you hear it straight from them.
Those are one of those stories that you that ain't how that happened. But it's had to toe legit.
Yeah, when you hear it, when they're talking about it, because you can tell, reading it, you read all what happened to them, what they've been through, but then when you hear it from them, you're kind of like, what really was their, what their struggle was, right? Yeah. What got to them, what didn't. And
we didn't even get into the weeds, like when he was growing up as a kid, how tough that had to be.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, growing up with a facial deformity like that, that's a tough road.
That dude was inspiring, man. He was 22, man. 22.
Yeah. He's just a kid.
He's a young guy. Yeah.
He's a kid.
It seems like he's got it way more figured out than I do.
That's kind of a depressing thing, the way to look at that. But
no, man.
I mean, at 22, look at everything that he's accomplished already. At 22, I'm still trying to figure out how to get out of college.
We had to join the SEAL teams and go get busted up just to get half the knowledge a guy would spit out in the last 30 minutes. Jake, man, thank you again. Never stop living. Follow your dreams, and whatever it is that comes in that head of yours, obviously you can see it just as plain as day. So thank you for kind of being that shining light for some of us when we need our motivation.
Yeah, absolutely, Joy. And thanks for sharing your afternoon with us.
If you want to be the first one to know when we drop a new episode, then you need to make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can press the purple subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or any other major podcast player to be notified the moment we release a new episode. The show is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much any other podcast player. We've got a ton of great episodes and had some incredible guests along the way, including Chris Cassidy, the Wim Hof, and Mike Ritlin.
If you're already following us on Facebook and Instagram, you know we keep our followers up to date with new gear, new sales, new guests, new events, and tons of other stuff you're not going to find anywhere else. If you're not following us yet, then you should be. You're missing out. Follow us at team_neverquit. You can also keep up with Marcus at Marcus Luttrell, Morgan at Mojo Luttrell, and me at Andrew Brockenbush on Instagram.
And Jake, welcome to the team.
Out here, buddy.
We're out.
Out.